person.
Good morning. Thanks to all of you for getting up bright and early and coming to see us today. We're just going to talk about working in the halls of power, whether it's in your own town or county or state or nation. And I'm Kathy Curtis, and I've already been introduced, so I won't get into that. This is Mary Jane.
I'm Mary Jane Williams. I've been involved in the policy arena now for probably close to 18 years as a nurse.
I've been doing it for about 23 years, so we're addicted, let's face it. And we wanted to talk about the effectiveness of collaboration and working with others. No, but no, you know, you can't win by yourself. It really does take a village to, and diversity as well, not just a lot of people and voices, but different perspectives and voices, the business voice, the worker voice, the community-based voice, the environmental justice perspective. And nurses, of course, are a very important part of that. So these are just some of the coalitions that Mary Jane and I participate in. The Just Green Partnerships from New York State, the Coalition for a Safe and Healthy Connecticut is obviously a Connecticut-based coalition. We are both part of a coalition of coalitions from 14 different states now called Safer States, and we're all part of the Safer Chemicals Healthy Families Coalition, and we bring the environmental health nursing perspective to that national effort to change chemicals policy.
As an educator for 40 years, you have to have objectives. We're going to give you just a quick overview and talk about what our role is, why we have such social trust, and then how do we move legislation along if that's what we're interested in moving along, and then what effective strategies we have.
So I know that Barb got into this a little bit about defining what environmental health is. And it addresses all of the human health-related aspects of the natural and built environment. So whatever we're exposed to on a daily basis, and how to control and assess them, and can then control factors that could affect our health. So all of our efforts are targeted towards preventing disease and creating environments that support better health. So it doesn't, as we all know, there are many factors that affect disease: genetics, diet, stress, etc. And so it's anything that isn't those other factors that affects disease, social and cultural factors. So there are a lot of different ways to approach environmental health concerns. Hazardous materials management. This doesn't have any of the graphics. Okay, we're going to just go through it. Chemical plant disaster preparedness and response. You can either put up more fences and have more guards and more lights shine on a chemical plant, or you can use inherently safer technologies within the plants and not have them be storing 144,000 gallons of chlorine that, you know, the fence and the guards won't really help if somebody flies a plane into it and it contaminates the entire community, for example. Medical waste management and disposal, I think that's improved greatly over the several years. It was interesting how there used to be medical waste incinerators right in hospitals, burning plastics and putting dioxin, one of the most harmful chemicals known to humankind, out into the communities that the hospital actually served. So that's improved greatly. And, of course, occupational health and industrial hygiene. As nurses, we're exposed to a lot of chemicals on the job and just in the materials that we use, in the electronics, and, you know, just even in building materials, carpeting and draperies, et cetera, textiles. And then there's just toxic chemical exposure from just all of the built environment, all of the man-made materials. And I was amazed to learn. We all sort of think of pollution or toxic, you know, environmental degradation as something that comes out of a smokestack or gets into a river through a pipe, right? Or dump trucks loaded with hazardous materials going to dump it in a landfill. And I was amazed to find out that more than 90% of the toxic chemicals that exist and are produced in any given year don't go into the air, water, or soil. but actually leave factories, manufacturing facilities, in the products themselves, in the cleaners and cosmetics and electronics and toys and furniture that we all use every day. So the toxic release inventory data, which you can go to the Environmental Protection Agency website and obtain, to find out if there are releasers of toxic chemicals near you and how much and what kind, that represents only about 5% of the toxics that actually leave manufacturing facilities. So it's one of those, here, look over here. Don't look over here. Just look over here, you know, and that's a very unregulated part of the toxic economy. So it's really hard to get information about product ingredients, even from people who make them. Like, they'll get materials, and they won't be able to find out what is in actually the materials that they get. So how did we get here? How did that happen, where 90% of the toxic chemicals, you know, released every year are in the products? Well, the Toxic Substances Control Act is what regulates chemicals in the United States. It's a bill that was passed in 1976 and has never been changed or updated since. So since, you know, some of us probably in this room, before we were born even, certainly before many of us in this room ever had children. So here we are with 80,000 chemicals in commerce. Over 60,000 of them were grandfathered in and magically assumed safe in 1976 when the Toxic Substances Control Act was passed. Okay? They only have adequate safety data for about 200 of those 83,000 chemicals. Okay, so we're all living in a large, unregulated chemical experiment. Okay, there's no pre-market testing that's required before chemicals are released onto the market. So it's just sort of a wait and see until the bodies stack up. And it's very, you know, sort of backwards. Since the Toxic Substance Control Act passed, only five chemicals or chemical classes have been banned. Very few. The burden of proof under the Toxic Substance Control Act is so high that the EPA cannot meet it. In fact, they tried to ban asbestos back in 1990, over 20 years ago. They had this whole room full of documentation about the harm asbestos causes. And after they banned it, the asbestos companies sued, and they won. So the burden of proof under TSCA is so high that it can't be met. The EPA gave up. They haven't tried to regulate a single chemical or ban a single chemical since, for over 20 years, of the 83,000 commerce, thousands more being added every year. So, as I said, onerous burden of proof. And the testing requirements, instead of a chemical maker having to test their own product before they bring it to market, the EPA has to test these chemicals, and it's about $1 million each. It's certainly hundreds of thousands of dollars each. So they just don't do it. So there's been an effort to reform the Toxic Substances Control Act since 2004, when the first bill was introduced to reform it and address some of these huge problems. And now there's a bill in Congress introduced by Senator Frank Lautenberg from New Jersey. It's Senate Bill number 847, and we are working to get that passed. And, you know, it's supposed to be up for a committee vote this month. Today is November 1st, right? So November, yeah. So we're looking forward to that. We're really doing that big push to get it out of committee and onto the full floor. And why are the feds so far behind? Why is the federal government so far behind so many efforts? I mean, green is like the new black. It's in style. Every single company and government feels the need, at least, to appear to have a green agenda or a green product line. You know, it's a very popular thing. So why aren't the feds moving? Why is that battleship just not turning? Three ways that we're forcing this federal reform is through a state-based approach, through international efforts. Other countries are ahead of us. We hate that when that happens. And market pressure, where companies themselves are changing what they're doing. So states are leading the way. Certainly, there's a great number of state policies that have been emerging and passing in the last decade. And, for example, there's quite a few states that have bans on mercury. Connecticut just passed a ban on bisphenol A. That's the strongest in the country. About 10 states have some form of bisphenol A ban now. And the PBDs, the toxic flame retardants, many states are addressing them, cadmium, lead, et cetera. And some states are doing product sectors, like regulating cosmetics or household cleaning products or other electronics, different product sectors. And some states are even passing comprehensive reform that doesn't go from one chemical or a class of chemicals, but looks at all chemicals. Because what we've seen over the past decade or so is the chemical industry will go, oh, well, you banned penta-BDE? Then we'll just add a couple molecules and we'll call it octa-BDE, and it won't be banned. Even though it's very structurally similar, very similar in health impacts and environmental impacts, but it's not a banned chemical because you only ban. You don't like lead in jewelry or in children's toys? Okay, then we'll just start using cadmium. So this whack-a-mole effect of, you know, just switching the, moving the molecule, it needs to be addressed more comprehensively. And that's why states are addressing it by this systemic approach, where first they would create a high hazard list of chemicals, say 2,000, the ones that they know are bad. Prioritize these chemicals based on use. If they're used in aircraft engines, okay, fine. If they're used in pacifiers, let's prioritize them. And it would require the makers of these products to disclose their use, and then the government could assess the alternatives and require them when feasible. The international efforts that are pressing, you may have heard of REACH. It stands for the Registration, Evaluation, and the Authorization of Chemicals. That's a European Union. It's sort of the process I just described that's happening at the state level is happening in the EU. And the Restriction of Hazardous Substances legislation. There's the Stockholm Convention that I believe over 160 governments across the world have signed on to get rid of the worst. They started with 12 chemicals. They call them the Dirty Dozen. And now they're adding chemicals every time they meet. 160-something governments have signed on to the Stockholm Convention, but not the United States. Okay. We just don't work and play well with others. Part of it, though, is they must reform TSCA. They must reform the Toxic Substances Control Act before they can sign on to the Stockholm Convention. Otherwise, it would be illegal. So then there's Canada's efforts. They are also ahead of us in classifying chemicals as harmful, in restricting their use, and then there's countries acting on specific chemicals. It's interesting how often, especially in the EU and Canada, that these chemical reforms are linked to also places where there's universal health care. I think the government said, wait a minute, all these people are getting sick and we're having to pay for those chronic disorders and conditions and, you know, diseases of lifelong consequences. A child's born with a learning disability, that's the rest of their life. So the chemical industry has been able to externalize their costs onto the rest of us, and governments are saying, not anymore in these countries. The market shifts are the other squeeze. Consumer demand is driving safer products. People are reading labels. They're calling manufacturers. They're letting their voices be heard, their demand for safer, cleaner products. And even retail regulation we're starting to see, where Walmart, for example, put out a message to all of their vendors, every single company that they buy products from, saying, we do not want these PBDE toxic flame retardants in anything you sell us. So that sends a huge market signal and a policy and regulatory one as well. And so those three things together are driving this federal reform.
And it's our role as nurses, based on social policy statement, that we take an active advocacy role in improving public health. So these, I'm going to run through these really quickly because I'm sure we're out of time. And I'll make one thing. Senator Edward Kennedy, 30 years ago, said that nurses have the most potential political power in the United States, but they fail to use it. And those words are reiterated every day. What is our role? We are educators. We have information based on the evidence. I work in the policy arena. I am not a lobbyist. I'm an unaffiliated voter. I'm a volunteer, and I'm an information broker. And when I go to the Capitol, to be a political advocate. I know I have the right preparation because I'm a nurse, and we know the nursing process better than anybody. And so we use that in getting prepared for the five rights of political advocacy. We know how to communicate. We teach people communication skills from the time you enter your first year in your nursing program. We know how to craft the message because we know how to communicate. And we know how to craft the request. And we know how to repeat. As an educator, that's how you learn, by repetition. And so if you go in with the facts and the evidence, you can't help but become a great political advocate. Identify what your outcomes are. Most people go in and they don't know what they really want. And seeing as I only have 3 minutes, I'm going to really whip through this. So you need to decide what you really want. What is your ask? Engage with your legislators. I work in Connecticut. I know the legislators. I know all the committee co-chairs. I meet with the committee co-chairs before the session starts. I tell them what I want for my organization. And I represent, right now, several other organizations. We represent the school nurses, and I will tell you that the Public Health Nursing Association in Connecticut has just asked if we would represent them, because they want us to work with them. Because I never ask for something for nursing. Everything I ask for relates to the health of the public that we serve, because that's what we're really doing. So I think you really have to focus on getting to know your policymakers. I use testimony because I present all the evidence. So, and I clearly identify who I am and what I want, and I clearly identify the information that they need to have. Connecticut, as well as New York, we build coalitions. When I first took this role as chair of government relations in Connecticut, I had absolutely no one to work with, and we were fighting for advanced practice registered nurses. That's another coalition. Right away, we put a coalition together. We've become extremely effective. Did a scope of practice bill this year that, according to Senator Moore from Massachusetts, is some of the best language that's come out. But it was a battle. We were bloodied. But we came out with the language we wanted. So we established our goals, we got the right people together, and we worked very strongly as a coalition. And then we built networks with the other professions that needed to do this. So it's not only, again, about nursing. You know, I had the chair of the Judicial Committee come down and say to me, you know, I'm going to pass that bill that you want. And I looked at him and I said, why? He said, because you're the first nurse who came in here and said, this is not about nursing. This is about this, 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 and this. He said, and nurses are so self-centered, they don't realize that it affects everybody globally. So our networks and coalitions involve anybody who might have something that concerns them about the issues that are coming forward. Power. We have a great deal of power. And power is, I love the word power. It's how you use that power. And so in order to do that, you need to know that you have power, you know how to use that power, you know how to present a powerful picture. We had to give testimony quickly last year in a case that was in Connecticut, and the school nurse called me and she said, I can't come in, I don't have a suit, I'm in dungarees, it's dress down day. I said, put on your black raincoat, I'll give you a scarf, don't take it off. You've got to come. Conclusion, together we can win. It is a multi-pronged approach to environmental health, to policy. We bring many varied, intelligent voices to the table. We know how to build strong networks. Public sentiment truly trusts us as healthcare providers. And so through collaboration, we can make this world safer. And I will ask Barbara to post these on the Annie website so you have all the information.
Thank you.
Thank you.